Welcome to Dolly Shares, a show where Dolly Howard shares her experiences, thoughts, and emotions as only Dolly can. This is a pre-recorded presentation.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone. Welcome to number 84, pre-recorded Dolly Shares. Coming to you from Dolly World. I'm recording this to be aired the first time on Wednesday, September 23, 2020. That's today. Nancy Hopkins is a producer, and I'm Dolly Howard. I just don't have anything in my head that I want to share that's worth sharing. I'm busy thinking about all my different chores to get done. Like, I got my laundry done yesterday, and that was down to I had to do it because I didn't have any clean underwear left. And so that motivated me, and I did 3 loads of laundry and got it all done. And I got a new nightstand with a opening in the top and then 2 drawers. Annette put it together for me, bless her heart. And the drawers slide really nice. I cleaned out my old nightstand. Boy, I found so much candy in there, I could have opened a candy store, y'all. I couldn't believe it. I had it in the bottom 2 drawers and something up in the top drawer. I have 3 drawers in the old one. So I gathered it all up. You could tell I wasn't eating it because I had to gather it all up. I didn't even open. Just a minute. I only had like 2 packages open. And they were still full. The others weren't even open, so I gathered them up and put them in a bag so I can give them away to whoever comes to the house. I'm thinking about giving them to Nett's friend, Ren. She has kids. I can provide them a sugar high. She might not appreciate it. So anyway... I got my nightstand all set up, and I ordered a new light that I'm loving. It's a floor lamp, and the light shines up to the ceiling, but I can tip it any way I want to. I'm really enjoying that, and it has different settings on it, and different hues, a blue hue, a white hue, and a muted type hue, a grayish hue. But anyway, I'm loving it. And then I also got a new credenza. It has a opening in the middle, and on the sides it has doors where it has a shelf in each side. And I'm in the process of sorting out my books by category. God here, universe stuff here, miscellaneous there, Bible stuff here, and I found out I have 8 dictionaries. Every time the kids ask me, how do you spell this, Mom? I tell them, look it up. So, over the years, I have gathered that many dictionaries. It just cracked me up. I have 3 of them that are the crossword dictionaries. They're the same thing. So I thought, well, I'm going to throw one of these suckers away. And so I'm looking at them. One of them is so old and used, it's turned brown, it's glued together, and it's taped together. You could tell this thing has been used, but I can't get rid of it because it gives me good memories. So I looked at the other one, and that one is almost in the same shape as the one I just told you about. It doesn't have the stuff to hold it together, but it sure looks like it could use it, and that has memories too. So I can't get rid of that one. And then I got a brand new one. Well, one that's still in brand new condition. And of course I can't get rid of that one because it was the latest edition at that time. So I'm keeping three books. Dictionary type books. Scrabble word lookup books. That are identical. Because I can't seem to get part with them. But that's okay because I have the good memories from them. Oh my gosh, it's crazy. And so I've got them all stacked up over there on that side of the, on the credenza in where I used to have them. They're all stacked up because I'm in the process yet of sorting them. Some books you don't know which category to put them because they're kind of in the middle, and they talk about a couple different things that you have solid categories for. So I don't know which category I want to put them in. But anyway, my mind's been occupied with those things. And see how boring that was for you to talk about it? Annette put the credenza together, too. But that way it unclutters my book corner. And I have my globe sitting on the top of the credenza. That was a big deal when I got my globe. I called myself Dolly of the Globe because I loved it so much. I wanted a globe really bad. Amber's laying here, legs that half lay where she's more on her back, and the cute lay, "Here I am, pet me." Jeez. Annette walked in the room to talk to me a little while ago, and Amber was outside, and I have the bedroom door open to the lanai because it's a beautiful day today, and I love fresh air. So the cats can come and go as they please out of the bedroom rather than their cat door. Out of the door that goes outside from Annette's bathroom. So they're running in and out of the bedroom door. And Annette came in here. Amber was outside. She saw and heard Annette. So she ran in here, jumped on the bed, and sat over my legs. She is that jealous of anyone who comes near me. Doesn't matter if it's Annette. Anytime Amber thinks somebody's near me, paying attention to me, she's got to run in here and protect me. She's my protector cat, guard cat. So, anyway, I don't know how I got so off track. Maybe, oh, I know, right? I was leading up to, Nancy gave me a suggestion for today. She said I could teach or talk about, hold on, let me see here. We're talking about Trump. We talk with each other when Trump's on. Speculating about this and that. It's fun. I don't know, but she suggested Supreme Court. I should talk or teach about the Supreme Court. And right away I'm ahead. Seriously? That's so freaking boring in my mind. But it was a subject I could talk on. And I don't know anything about, so of course I have to read to you from what I have found on the internet about it. But so that's what we'll be talking about today. And that is after I read the angel card. Read the angel card. Here's the angel card. Archangel Metatron, Sacred Geometry. My Archangel Metatron comes forth this day to remind you of how thoughts create, are very powerful, and can change your life for better or worse. Your thoughts can create your world that you choose to live in. Metatron would like to advise you to be aware of this fact and to understand that as you think and speak, you are creating your world around you. Your thoughts and words on an energetic level are shapes of geometric patterns. The vibration will depend on the patterning. The most recent example of this is Dr. Masaru Emoto's experiment with water crystals. He showed how positive words create beautiful snowflakes and how negative words created damaged snowflakes. Science has proven nature is made of sacred geometry patterns. We are part of this patterning, and so is the earth. We have an energy grid around us like the earth. Ask Archangel Metatron to bring his light and healing into your grid and the earth's grid. Feel the crystals and sacred geometric patterns. Have fun experimenting with patterns that you speak to. Give thanks to Metatron for his guidance. Archangel Metatron and all the other angels for loving and helping us. Put this down to bed. Oh yeah, before we get started on the Supreme Court, which I decided after spitting and sputtering and thinking for a while, I thought, well, why not? It's a today topic, literally. So let's explore it. But first, I need to read. Let's see, we'll delete this. Okay. Now I've got to save this. Hold on. There we go. Now, I was reading the Facebook comments, Cosmic Reality Facebook comments. Across this one. Oh, I put it down so I couldn't use it. Come on, Dolly. I'm going to paste this here. Paste and go. Let's do that. I hope it pulls up. Oh, no. It's a different one than I thought it was. I had run across this thing and I posted it myself on the on that Facebook. Pedophiles to be executed and rapists castrated in Nigerian state. The Nigerians are pretty with it. They aren't putting up with that crap anymore. You go messing where you shouldn't be messing, you're gonna lose some parts you don't want to lose. I'm saying this to whoever does it. Not to you, personally. Okay, so there was that one. Now let's go back to here. This was a post by Marjorie Tui Jean. This thing gets in my way. She says, more on R.B. Ginsburg from American Intelligence Media, AIM, on September 21st, 2020. Full disclosure and truth. RGB passing an October surprise, Black Swan, Cosmic Curveball, Divine Intervention, or all four. It was actually a president using good intelligence and precision timing in delivering the SCOTUS blow. B-L-O-W. I'm having trouble keeping my teeth up in my mouth. They want to fall down. So you'll have to bear with me. In our opinion, the president knew all along that the demons were keeping RBG on ice, waiting for post-election. Stolen, of course. And that was in parentheses. To put in another extreme baby-killing justice. They were waiting to do that. And the president knew it. But our president waited. Dot, 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 dot. And waited. Dot, dot, dot. Until a few weeks ago when he started rattling some cages and making some noise. And he's so good at that, y'all. I love it when he does it. The demons got spooked, thinking that the president would find out that Ruthie was dead. So they sent out that horrible Photoshop image of Ruthie officiating a wedding as proof of life. It was bad and widely ridiculed. After the failed wedding photo, the president knew he had them in a tight corner with no wiggle room. So he sends out his updated list for Supreme Court justices. This was their final warning. They would need to come clean about the dead woman or expose the entire Supreme Court for fraud, because what judge on the bench doesn't know that Ruthie's clerks have been running this scam? Voila! The very stable genius made them give up the corpse before the election. With plenty of time to put a conservative on the bench, knowing how deeply corrupt the Roberts Supreme Court is. Citizens are going to keep a spotlight on these corrupt judges. I wanted to read that because it pertains to the Supreme Court we're going to talk about today, and and I find it rather humorous. Every time the deep state beings fall for his traps. I mean, he lines them up, he sets up the scenario, they buy it, and they just show their behinds all the time. It's absolutely hilarious to me. Okay, I want to save this document. And I can put this down. And we can go to... Just a minute. I need a drink of coffee. I'm going to put you on. I'm going to put me on a break. All right, I'm back. Let's see. Where is this from? This is from... we're going to start with the Supreme Court research I found. A little bit of history on it. It's from the History Channel Facebook. No, History Channel article. It was original date on it was May 11, 2010. And then it was updated on February. I was born in this month and can never pronounce it right. February 13, 2019. Supreme Court History.com editors. Oh, Amber, I gotta get her under the covers. And then she'll settle down and leave me alone. So, there. Okay, the contents in this is, number one, early days of the Supreme Court. Number two, Supreme Court justices. Number three, current Supreme Court justices. Number four, notable Supreme Court justices. Number five, Supreme Court cases. And number six is sources. So, the Supreme Court of the United States, or also called SCOTUS, which is the first initials of those words, Supreme Court of the United States, is the highest federal court in the country and the head of the judicial branch of government, established by the U.S. Constitution. The Supreme Court has the ultimate jurisdiction over all laws within the United States and is responsible for evaluating the constitutionality of those laws. If necessary, the court, which is currently made up of 9 justices, has the power to check the actions of the other 2 branches of government, which are the executive branch of the president and the legislative branch of Congress. Another section titled Early Days of the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court was established in 1789 by Article 3 of the U.S. Constitution, which also granted Congress the power to create inferior federal courts. The Constitution permitted Congress to decide the organization of the Supreme Court, and the legislative branch first exercised this power with the Judiciary Act of 1789. The act, signed into law by President George Washington, specified that the court would be made up of 6 justices who would serve on the court until they died or retired. The Supreme Court was set to first assemble on February 1, 1790, at the Merchants Exchange Building in New York City. But due to some justices' transportation issues, the meeting had to be postponed until the next day. Wasn't too easy getting around back then in 1790. Though the court had its first meeting on February 2, 1790, it didn't actually hear any cases in its first term. The court's early meetings were concentrated on working out organizational procedures. Always got to figure out who's the boss. Every time. Meetings in, it works. Whenever they set a meeting up, they got to figure out who's going to be the boss of this meeting. Jeez. Okay, I got off on a tangent. The 6 justices handed down their first decision on August 3, 1791, just one day after the court heard arguments for the case with West versus Barnes, an unremarkable case involving a financial dispute between a farmer and a family he owed debt to. For more than 100 years after the foundation of the Supreme Court, the justices were required to hold circuit court 2x a year in each judicial circuit. That was a grueling duty, given the primitive travel methods at that time, that Congress formally abolished in 1890. Supreme Court justices is our new section. The Supreme Court's justices are nominated by the President of the United States. You got that? The Supreme Court's justices are nominated by the President of the United States and confirmed or denied by the U.S. Senate. The first Supreme Court was made up of Chief Justice John Jay and Associate Justices John Rutledge, William Cushing, John Blair, Robert Harrison, and James Wilson. The highest judicial officer in the nation, the Chief Justice, is responsible for presiding over the Supreme Court and setting the agenda for the justices' weekly meetings. In cases where the Chief Justice is a member of the majority opinion, the justice has the authority to assign who will write the court's opinion. The Chief Justice is required to sit on the Board of Regents of the Smithsonian Institution. What? Really? Maybe next week we'll have to check out the Smithsonian Institution, if I can remember. I'm going to try to remember, okay? Wait a minute. While we're talking, what I can do is go into my file for Dolly Shares and type it out. What was it I was typing? Smithsonian. S-O-N-I-A-N. Okay. I'll save it. And then I'll have that. I won't have to try to remember. It'll just be there. So the Chief Justice also presides over trials of impeachment against the President of the United States in the U.S. Senate. The Chief Justice also presides over trials of impeachment against the President of the United States in the U.S. Senate, as was the case with President Andrew Johnson and President Bill Clinton. Both presidents were acquitted. Same with Donald J. Trump. Hold on. Current Supreme Court justices is our new topic. Though the first court comprised of 6 justices, Congress altered the number of Supreme Court seats from a low of 5 to a high of 10, 6 times over the years. In 1869, Congress set the number of seats to 9, where it has remained until today, which makes sense, so you don't have a tie vote, in my opinion. As of April 2017, 113 justices have served on the Supreme Court. The current Supreme Court is comprised of Chief Justice John Roberts, Jr., and Associate Justices Anthony Kennedy, Clarence Thomas, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Stephen Breyer, Samuel Alito, Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, and Neil Gorsuch. Wait a minute. That's not true today. Hold on, I got my handy dandy laptop sitting here. Let's look it up. Who are the Supreme Court justices? Members. Let me see. Think. Oops. So, Supreme Court of the United States. Current members, John G. Roberts, Jr., Chief Justice of the United States. That dude, well, he's crookeder than crooked. Oh, this is my opinion. Ha! Let's see, what does it say about him? Born in Buffalo, New York, January 27, 1955. He's younger than I am. He married Jane Marie Sullivan in 1996, and they have 2 children, Josephine and Jack. I guess they got to keep with the J's in the name. Because his name's John, his kids Josephine and Jack, and his wife is Jane, so the J's. He received an A.B. from Harvard College in 1976 and a J.D. from Harvard Law School in 1979. He served as a law clerk for Judge Henry J. Friendly of the United States Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit from 1979 to 1980 and as a law clerk for then-Associate Justice William H. Rehnquist of the Supreme Court of the United States during the 1980 term. He was Special Assistant to the Attorney General, U.S. Department of Justice from 1981 to 82, Associate Counsel to President Ronald Reagan, White House Counsel Office from 82 to 86, and Principal Duty Solicitor General. No, I read that wrong. Principal Deputy Solicitor General, U.S. Department of Justice from 89 to 93. And yada, yada, yada. He was appointed to the United States Circuit Court in 2003. President George W. Bush nominated him as Chief Justice of the United States, and he took his seat September 29, 2003. So freaking crooked. My opinion, my opinion. Another one is Clarence Thomas. He's the associate judge. Stephen G. Breyer. He looks like a goofy guy. That's just a goofy picture of him, I think. Samuel A. Alito, Jr., associate justice. It gets stuck. Sonia Sotomayor, associate justice. Elena Kagan, Associate Justice. Neil M. Gorsuch, Associate Justice. And here he is, Brett M. Kavanaugh, Associate Justice. He's the one that Kamal Harris gave all the crap to, and the other beings. Let's get back to, where are we? Okay, here we are. No, wait, where am I? The history. I have so many tabs open. Okay, so those are the current Supreme Court justices. Now, notable Supreme Court justices. This is a new topic. Many of the Supreme Court justices were distinct for one reason or another. Chief Justice John Marshall, for instance, is widely regarded as one of the influential chief justices, in part for having defined the relationship between the judiciary and the rest of the government. In Maybury versus Madison in 1803, he established the Supreme Court's power to review and rule on the constitutionality of federal laws enacted by Congress. Marshall was the fourth justice and served in the position for more than 34 years, the longest term of any chief justice, at least at the writing of this article. In the 1930s, Chief Justice Charles Evans Hughes presided over the court as it transitioned from being the protector of property rights to the protector of civil liberties. Notably, he wrote landmark opinions on the freedom of speech and press. And Chief Justice Earl Warren, in the 1950s and 1960s, issued numerous landmark decisions, including ones that banned school segregation, Brown versus Board of Education, put in place Miranda rights or the right to remain silent, warning given by police, Miranda versus Arizona, and abolished interracial marriage prohibitions. Loving versus Virginia. Hey, I didn't know that was a law. Sorry, I'm having trouble today. Not an easy day, but I shall prevail. The right to remain silent, and then abolished interracial marriage prohibitions. I had no clue that existed even. Goodness sake. Well, okay, where were we? The Supreme Court has seen numerous other notable justices, including William Howard Taft, the only person to serve as both president and chief justice. Thurgood Marshall, the first African-American justice. Sandra Day O'Connor, the first female justice. And Sonia Sotomayor, the first Hispanic justice. Oh, no, that paragraph is just full of racialisms. What are they? Racist! It's racist! Because it called out African American and first Hispanic and first female. Oh, boy. Deep State read that, they'd have a conniption. Everything's racist. I even call Annette racist when she says something that I might disagree with. Oh, you're a racist. It's fun. I just have fun with it anymore. I don't take it serious. Fun thing to play with. Although in reality it's not. Okay, new topic, Supreme Court cases. In its more than 200-year history, SCOTUS has held a wealth of important cases, which have had lasting impacts on the nation, for better or worse. For example, before Warren's pro-civil rights decisions, the court denied citizenship to African American slaves in 1857, Dred Scott versus Sanford, upheld state segregation laws in 1896 in Plessy versus Ferguson, and upheld World War II internment camps for Japanese Americans in 1944, Korematsu versus United States. That's awful. What they did to our people, our citizens, who happened to be Japanese. Oh my gosh, oh my God. Of course, the courts weighed in on more than just civil rights issues. In 1962's Engel versus Vitale, SCOTUS ruled that prayer initiated by and within public schools violates the First Amendment, in parentheses, in the 2000 case, Santa Fe Independent School District versus Doe. It further ruled that students cannot lead prayer using the school's loudspeaker system, end of parentheses. And in 1963, it found that defendants who cannot afford legal representation must be provided it without charge. Gideon versus Wainwright. Madeline Murphy O'Hare was the bitch that started that thing about no prayer in schools, and she took it to the Congress people, and then it went through the court system. She was atheist. She ended up in not very nice situation. She's dead. If you want to know more about her, you can look her up. Madeline Murray O'Hare. She was awful, people. She was awful. Look her up. I suppose that could be another topic. Hold on, let me pull this up. Yeah, Murray O'Hare Lynch. She was a sick woman. Okay, other important cases include, let's see if we've heard of any of these. Mapp, M-A-P-P, versus Ohio, 1961, which held that evidence obtained illegally cannot be used in criminal cases. Texas versus Johnson, 1989, which found that flag burning and other potentially offensive speech is protected by the First Amendment. Oh, good. So my bad mouth is protected by the First Amendment. Boy, I'm still thinking how bad that woman is. Oh, my gosh. It happened when I was in high school, I do believe. She was so bad. Oh, I see I need to plug in my laptop. Hold on. Okay. Where are we? Roe versus Wade, the biggie. 1973, which ruled that women have a right to an abortion during the first two trimesters. The two trimesters. U.S. versus Nixon. 1974, which found that the president cannot use his or her power to withhold evidence in criminal trials. Lawrence versus Texas, 2003, which struck down state anti-sodomy laws. Lawrence versus Texas, 2003, which struck down state anti-sodomy laws. Heck, I'm not going there. United States versus Windsor, 2013, which revoked the U.S. government's ability to deny federal benefits to same-sex couples. Interesting. I sort of remember that. Hearing about it, anyway. Obergefell, O-B-E-R-G-E-F-E-L-L, versus Hodges, 2015, which legalized same-sex marriage across all 50 states. Oh, I didn't know that. I thought it was state by state. Very interesting. Oh, we are to section sources. Let's see what this frequently asked questions. The court is an institution. Okay, that's places you can go if you want to. New section, citation information. Article title, Supreme Court, author history.com, editor's website name is history. And it gives a URL, which I'm not going to give. It's too long. Just look up history.com, editors. Access date, September 23, 2020. Oh, hey, that's when I accessed it, today. Publisher, A&E Television Networks. Last updated, February 13, 2019. Original published date, May 11, 2020. Fact check. We strive for accuracy and fairness. But if you see something that doesn't look right, click here to contact us. So that's the end of the history lesson thing. Here is, what is this that interested me? What is this crap? Oh, for goodness sake, it's an advertisement. I don't know how to get the... How do I get out of this sucker? Donate. Show me. I'm not going to donate. Continue to cite. There it is. Little tiny letters at the bottom of that insert. Okay. Now, where are we? Oh, Britannica. if this is at Britannica.com/event/Bush versus Gore. That caught my attention and interested me, so I'm going to take you with me on this journey. Bush versus Gore law case. Gore law case. Written by, I didn't even know these people existed anymore. Encyclopedia Britannica's editors oversee subject areas in which they have extensive knowledge, whether from years of experience gained by working on that content or via study for an advanced degree. See article history. Okay, here we go. Oh, this guy looks cross-eyed. Bush versus Gore, case in which on because he's looking at something so close to his face. That's why his eyes hurt together like that. With a puzzled look on his face. Bush versus Gore, case in which on December 12, 2000, the Supreme Court of the United States reversed a Florida Supreme Court request for a selective manual recount of that state's U.S. presidential election ballots. The 5-4 decision effectively awarded Florida's 25 votes in the Electoral College, and thus the election itself, to Republican candidate George W. Bush. Well, actually, he just declared himself the president. I remember that night. It was ridiculous. I sat there with my mouth hanging down to the floor. What? He can't do that. But he did. Let's see. A Florida judge examining a challenged vote at an operations center in Plantation, Florida. Oh, hey! Plantation, Florida is right there in Venice, where I used to live. During a recount of the state's U.S. presidential election ballots 2000. That's when we had all those Chad things. You know, were they called Chads? Well, anyway, that's when that blew up. Oh, hey, here's more. On the evening of November 7, 2000, a clear winner had yet to emerge in that day's U.S. presidential election between Bush and Democrat candidate Al Gore. Print and broadcast media cited often contradictory exit polling numbers, and the races in Oregon and New Mexico would remain too close to call for some days. Ultimately, the contest focused on Florida. Networks initially projected Gore the winner in Florida, but later they declared that Bush had opened an insurmountable lead. Gore called Bush to concede the election, but in the early hours of the following morning, it became apparent that the Florida race was much closer than Gore's staff had originally believed. Fewer than 600 votes separated the candidates, and that margin appeared to be narrowing. Around 3 a.m., Gore called a stunned Bush to retract his concession. According to Florida law, a machine recount of all votes cast was required because the margin of victory was less than 0.5%. Okay. Because the margin of victory was less than 0.5%. In this race, the gap appeared to be roughly 0.01%. Both campaigns immediately dispatched teams of lawyers to Florida. Charges of conflict of interest were leveled by both sides. Bush's brother Jeb was the governor of the state, and Secretary of State Catherine Harris was the co-chair of Bush's Florida campaign, while state attorney General Bob Butterworth headed the Gore campaign. By November 10, the machine recount was complete, and Bush's lead stood at 327 votes out of 6 million cast, as court challenges were issued over the legality of hand recounts in select counties. News stories were filled with the arcane vocabulary of the election judge period. County officials tried to discern voter intent through a cloud of hanging chads. That's what they were, hanging chads. Incompletely punched paper ballots. That's what we had back then. And pregnant chads, which are paper ballots that were dimpled but not pierced during the voting process, as well as overvotes, ballots that recorded multiple votes for the same office, and undervotes, ballots that recorded no vote for a given office. Also at issue was the so-called butterfly ballot design used in Palm Beach County, which caused confusion among some Gore voters, prompting them to inadvertently cast their votes for third-party candidate Pat Buchanan, who received some 3,400, some 20% of his total votes statewide. And I used to say, well, they pulled, it wasn't just me. There were votes that were pulled out of Bush's brother's closet. Boxes of votes that were hidden in Bush's brother's closet. What's his name? I forgot it. I should know it. I mean, geez, oh, Pete. He was governor of the state. That's how long I remember things. Names, especially. It just goes out of my head. I can see him in my mind's eye, but I can't think of his name. And his wife. Spanish descent of her. She was Spanish descent. I'll remember it later when nobody's around and nobody cares. A tug of war ensued between Harris, who initially sought to certify the state's election results on November 14, and the Florida Supreme Court, which ruled that hand recounts of questionable ballots should proceed in four counties and that the results must be included in the state's final count. In the month following the election, some 50 individual suits were filed concerning the various counts, recounts, and certification deadlines. On December 8, in a 4-3 decision, the Florida Supreme Court ruled that manual recounts should continue in all counties where a statistically significant number of undervotes were observed for the office of president. It was such a frickin' zoo. It was absolutely... We Floridians... Anyway, let's read on. It was ridiculous. The Bush campaign immediately filed suit, and the U.S. Supreme Court issued a writ of certiorari, C-E-R-T-I-O-R-A-R-I, to take up the case the following day. On December 9, in a 5-4 decision, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in the case of Bush versus Gore that the manual recounts must halt, and it agreed to hear oral arguments from both parties. On December 11, the two sides presented their cases, Bush's team asserting that the Florida Supreme Court had exceeded its authority by authorizing the recount of undervotes, and Gore's team stating that the case having already been decided at state level, was not a matter for consideration at the federal court. Yada, 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 yada. In the end, Bush took over. So, that's that with that, because I got bored with it. Job description for Supreme Court. I don't know if I can get through all of this. Let me try to, because I only have a few minutes left. Let me see. Many parents, dream their child will be president or justice, yada yada. Important and controversial cases and issuing their rulings. Basics. The U.S. Supreme Court consists of a Chief Justice and a set number of Associate Justices as determined by Congress. Since 1948, that number has remained at 9. All justices have a lifetime appointment with the court. The U.S. Supreme Court annual term begins on the first Monday in October and continues until late June or early July. During the term, justices hear cases during 2-week sittings and write opinions and review cases during 2-week recesses. Review of cases. An attorney seeking U.S. Supreme Court review must petition the court to have his case heard. Justices jointly consider cases and determine which ones they will hear. The court hears a small percentage of the cases with which it is presented. Hearing of cases. During a U.S. Supreme Court hearing, each side's attorney is allowed 30 minutes to present his case. Since the justices almost always are reviewing the decision of a lower court, there is no jury and no witnesses are called to stand. Opinions. During recesses, justices review briefs and discuss the argued case. For each case, a majority vote is taken. The most senior judge in the majority writes a case's opinion, and the court releases its decision. Other justices may write concurring or dissenting opinions, which do not affect the court's decision. In rare cases, the court may release a per curiam opinion, an opinion issued by the justices as a group, with no individual justice claiming authorship. Oh, I'm making it. Experience and salary. Current membership in a state bar is a prerequisite for becoming a Supreme Court justice. Many justices work their way up through the legal system, perhaps starting as prosecuting attorney, then taking positions as justices in local, appellate, and federal courts. As of 2009, the Chief Justice was paid $223,500 per year, while an Associate Justice receives $213,900. And I'm sure that has gone way up since 2009. That's it on the Supreme Court. So I hope you learned something or found something interesting. So until I talk at you the next time, I'm saying don't forget to throw out the love blankets or whatever else you want to put in those blankets. Bye bye from Dollywood.
You have been listening to Dolly Shares with Dolly Howard. Thank you for listening.